The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's the day after, and needless to say, but I will say it anyway, I hope most everyone out there was able, and that's the key word, able, to have a nice, peaceful, hopefully happy family day, if you have a family. Some of us don't, and it becomes a different situation entirely. So let's go find out what's going on with our friend in the great state of I guess it's a great state. It used to be a great state. Are you there, young man? New Mexico, that's what it was. I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, somewhere near there.
You're not in New Mexico. Where the heck are you? Where are you?
I'm in Virginia. I'm on the other side of the country.
That's right.
The cradle of the Confederacy. Yeah.
Donald Jeffries is a resident and taxpayer in the great state of Virginia.
Right. That's right.
State of Virginia.
Right. Formerly the great state of Virginia. That's right. Well, it is Northern Virginia. So, you know, not close. but we were very close to D.C. So, I had a great Christmas.
Did you? Blessed. You had? No, wait. Wait. I had a great Christmas. That's a nice statement. And people use the word great like they use commas now in sentences. Those who even still put commas in sentences, which is a lost art. But did you really have a good time? I know you would, or you wouldn't say that, but just a little bit, because you got a split family, a split vax family situation.
Yeah, but the people that really matter, my immediate family, my kids, my wife, one of my sisters came over, so that was nice, and one of her daughters and her, and her husband and my brother-in-law.
Gesundheit.
So, thank you, but... it is that situation still in terms of the vaccination, but everybody that matters is there. And I, you know, Jeff, I hear from, I'm just grateful for everybody I hear from. And a lot of them found me through you. You apparently have a tremendous reach because I hear from just in the last few days, I heard from somebody who listens to me and I think they were all Rent scholars. One was in Thailand. One was in South Africa. And one was in, where was the other one? I can't even remember, but it was you know, somewhere far away.
Yeah, and, I understand.
But
when
I,
they get
I
to the next planet over, let me know. That'll be interesting.
But, you know, people, because I write on Substack especially, I write a lot about, you know, I throw personal stuff in there. And I write also about cultural things and just kind of social phenomena. I don't just talk about politics. Like, you know, one of the things I wrote that I'm most proud of is called the American loneliness phenomenon. And I have it pinned at the top of my Substack page because I think it's that good.
This is, may I ask, hold on. When did you first write that?
I think it was it's over a year old, I think. Maybe a year or two.
I would suggest that you pull that out, brush it up a little if it needs it, and relaunch it. We have now loneliness as an epidemic in this country.
Yes.
And that includes people who are still, shall we say, connected to families. that maybe aren't talking to each other and whatever.
Yeah.
And for those of you all around this besieged and beleaguered planet, I do want to let you know that you matter to me and everyone here, all of us. We're all one radio family, and it is global, and you are all, no matter what government you're living under, what people you're surrounded with, what religious orientation or ethnicity orientation your country is, thank you for being here. You are thought of, and you do count. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And but I, because I write about, especially with the American loneliness phenomenon, so many people could relate to that. And I maybe it's just the nature of what I write and talk about. So I'm probably not going to attract maybe some happily, somebody who's making a couple $100,000 a year and is doing real well in the system that I'm criticizing all the time. So it's going to be people that have been, treated miserably by the system, mostly, because, which is the majority of Americans lose under this system, because we have a casino economy.
Oh, they get beaten up, and half of them have PTSD from just trying to survive. Right.
Right. And so those are the people that I tend to hear from. And I hear just the saddest stories about family dysfunction. I write a lot about family dysfunction. I've really encountered no one that I got to know well enough that they would tell me about it that doesn't have some kind of story in there, some kind of fractured relationship either. I mean, there's so many between parents and adult children that I'm going to do a show on that as soon as I can get enough. I've got two or three people committed. I'm going to have like three or four roundtable discussion of people that, one of my friends has, she has three daughters and they all just abandon her for, she doesn't know why. I mean,
they cut her off.
So they won't let her see the grandchildren. Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I can relate to that. I understand. And that is really awful. You knock yourself out being a great parent, fighting against insurmountable odds, and your children, for some reason, cut you off. I don't understand that.
It's no, awful. I don't either. And my, my next door neighbor, they, my kids grew up playing with their kids. And the daughter, they haven't seen her in 3 years or heard from her in 3 years. And they don't seem to know why.
Unbelievable. Horrible. Yeah.
And it's,
I don't like
and
even it's, hearing about that. It's awful.
No, and it's, but it's so... It's and they have the converse thing. I have friends where I have a guy that a young guy that I used to be close to. Now he's actually works with my son, but because he's closer in age to him. But his parents abandoned him, and he's been troubled. He's got diabetes. He's already lost a toe, and this great crackerjack healthcare system we have. They'll give you free vaccines every day, but you can't get free insulin if you need it. And he was sleeping in the woods in a tent for a while, and his parents, they have money. I know who they are. And it happens that way as well. But it's more often the adult children, I think, that turn their back
Correct.
To their parents. But so,
Correct.
But it's so it's. I think it's an.
I
issue
think that,
that
one, Don, excuse me. I think there's one way to look at that that makes sense, and it's probably a significant player in that awful situation. The cultural world, the social cultural world of young people now. Gen Z, millennials, with their cell phone addiction and all the rest of it, is really withering to familial ties. I don't know why, but they live in a different world. It's a completely different lifestyle. They don't know anything. You could title your page, your Substack page. I don't know what your title is on it, but you could I protest. That's right. You could title it, "It's a Wonderful Life," and put "wonderful" in quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that would work because you do write about life.
Yeah,
and it's not wonderful anymore.
No, and that's why so much I talk about, and I don't want to sound like a somebody that's yelling for kids to get off the lawn, but it really was, and there were lots of problems back then, but things have just gotten progressively worse. And you mentioned that in terms of kids having cell phones and everything now, social media. But even before that, the media, and I've written about this, I think what contributed to this, especially this phenomenon with adult children and parents, what contributed to this is the constant messaging in the media. I mean, you saw it. I remember, I think it was both. These stupid shows I just saw in passing, but I know that they had a thing where it was in many of the shows, but I remember that ridiculous show Rhoda back in the 70s, I believe, where she had this terrible relationship with her mother. And the other, I think Seinfeld.
It was an awful program. I couldn't stand the woman who starred in it. Awful.
Oh, it was horrible. Yeah, it was horrible. But that trope, that's a trope they have in Hollywood where it's a dread, especially with the adult. And I think this seems to happen more with daughters than sons. Not always, but it seems more daughters than sons. And that the propaganda was a lot of times was utilized to say that a career woman, adult woman living on her own, a Mary Tyler Moore type, would dread hearing, oh, my mother's going to visit me. And it would be like, instead of like a celebration, oh, I haven't seen my mom. It was, they were dreading and they confide to their gal pals and they're all rolling their eyes together and criticizing their own mothers or their own parents.
That's disgusting.
Then, but that was the messaging over and over again, that this was not about love. It was the mothers were too critical of the daughters, that kind of thing.
And I mean, obligatory relationships. I get it.
Yeah. And so, you know, life imitates art and around often. And so I think, you know, that kind of conditioning, it's the same reason why you see the way the elderly are treated in this country. And I've written about that as well, that we're the number one country. Anyway, but it's basically, if you look at all the non-white, predominantly non-white societies, all the Asian cultures, especially Africa, the Arabic nations, people, there's all the brown people. They all still, to varying degrees, revere and respect their elders, and they call them elders. And it's completely different in the Western nations, all the white nations, but especially America leading the way, where the elderly here get no respect at all. They're thrown into these horrible places, nursing homes, and everybody knows they're horrible. I mean, I think Geraldo got his start years ago, exposing one of them, you know, back in the 70s. And so people have known how bad these places were for a long time. And they're incredibly expensive. You know, money is usually a motive where, you know, it would kind of supersede anything else, but not in this case. So you have kids that are frittering away. Adult children are actually frittering away their inheritance there, because most of these places are $7,000-$8,000 a month now for, you know, anyone that's halfway decent. It isn't, you know, and even the decent ones aren't that good. But you don't see that anywhere else. You didn't see it in America until 100 years ago or so, when they started making inroads of it. So these are the kind of things I like to concentrate on. And I think, again, that's why with the way the economy is, you're seeing a little bit. You are seeing more adult children having to stay at home. Oh, just because so. And that's the way it was before the baby boomer generation. That was normal in America. So when people look at the show like the Waltons with the grandparents there, that's the way it was for a lot of families. And, you know, the grandparents, and that was a wonderful resource, because, you know, having grandparents, you know, a generation removed from young children, it's really, I think, bolstered the young kids' identity, and they had a sense of family, because somebody can, you know, grandma and grandpa can talk about something, you know, almost a century ago. And it's fascinating. I would have loved to have had that. But by the time I came along, that stuff was long gone. So I think that's why when I wrote The American Loneliness Phenomenon, again, it was in response to so many of these people that I know or contact me and are by themselves. And I just think it's one thing, you know, be like, you know, my sister, who's much older than me, she wants to be by herself. I mean, she has kids and grandchildren and she sees them a lot, but she wants to live by herself independently. And she's the opposite of me. I don't know if I'm by myself, you know, for a day or so, I start talking to myself, you know, I got to have people around. But so I understand that. And
it's okay, Don. It's those 4:30 a.m. phone calls from you that are hard to tolerate here. No, you're right. Welcome to call anytime. I'm kidding.
But, you know, I'm reminded by some of the people that are by themselves that are my, you know, fans of mine on, and, you know, let me know, I want to be alone. I don't like people. Okay, that's fine. If you're happy, that's cool. And, but it's for the people that are involuntarily alone, just like the involuntary celibates, the incels, the male incels that, you know, want to have a woman, but they can't, you know, it's one thing to, they can't attract one. So my heart goes out to those people. And
I concur. Yep.
And I have the stats in the article, but the number of people, number of households with no one, with one person in them is just, it's staggering how much it's gone up. And of course, now that's what's going to be even sadder is because of the cost of living now, the young people who end up with nobody or whatever, I'm not sure what's going to happen to them because they're not going to be able to afford to live by themselves. Because the cost of living in any kind of, I mean, in my area, right. God, it's like, right. you can't right. get a hardly a decent one-bedroom apartment under $2,000. And people are not going to be able to. So that's why I like that. So this time of the year, especially, I think of those people. And I think of the people that are some want to be, and some understandably people. There's a lot of people that aren't like me. I love Christmas, and I'm running around humming and singing the songs all the time, and I kind of say, "Watch it, It's a Wonderful Life" for the millionth time, and Christmas Carol and all that stuff. But there's a lot of people that don't feel that way, and it's because the way life has treated them, and so they see everybody else being, you know, happy and doing things that they can't do. They don't have a bunch of people gathered around the tree. So I just think some, again, don't care. And that's fine. If they want to be by themselves, that's fine. You know, you do what you want to do. But I just think it's sad if you want something or you lost something. You know, people, if you lose a loved one near Christmas time, one of our neighbors just, you know, the wife died last month. And I can't imagine what this Christmas was like for that family.
Well, and I mentioned this a number of times. I was thinking about all the people who would have an empty chair at the Christmas dinner table, an empty bedroom in the home, perhaps, loss, grief, pain. Michael Snyder, the writer, wrote a story today. It's like something you could write. This year, Americans have become hungrier, lonelier, and more desperate than ever.
Yeah. And there's no question about it. And it's relationships are becoming fractured anyhow. And as you mentioned, the really young people, the Gen Z people that are coming up, because of the world they're in, this cell phone world, and you can see them when I just astounded when I see, I don't know how many kids, especially girls, again, this stuff works. It just does. I'm sorry. I'm not being a misogynist, but the programming works better on females. It's obvious. And that's why I think it's directed towards them. But you can almost never find really a woman under 50 that's walking around that doesn't have her head buried in that phone where they're taking a walk of the neighborhood, wherever they're on that phone nonstop. And the young people, I mean, I've seen them texting. They'll literally be sitting a few feet away from each other, and they'll just be texting back and forth instead of talking. So
At the dinner table. That's common.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't understand that. But again, so it's a different world. And so I think that's already been fractured. So I think I don't know what, you know, again, my kids grew up, thankfully, before that. I mean, they were just getting cell phones. We waited until they were older teenagers to get them a cell phone but already at that time we were seeing, I remember there was one little girl that was on my daughter's basketball team, was about 9 and already had a cell phone, and a couple others did too. And I just thought, that's just, you know,
it's
they
a
don't
parental
need that.
Negligence.
Yeah.
And it's changing that child from that point on. That child has actually begun to be programmed away from parental authority, control, influence, wisdom. It turns them away from the family. That whole cell phone culture.
Absolutely.
And it makes it a very pathological peer group in terms of growth, maturity, wisdom.
Oh, yeah. That's why I think, the most interesting, it wouldn't be fun, but if the apocalypse, any kind of apocalyptic thing really happens, if things really do collapse, I think that the most interesting aspect of it all will be if the cell phone towers go down. Because again, these young people, they're going to walk around like zombies, like The Walking Dead, and they'll just be like aimlessly pushing buttons because they don't know any other life. I mean, they don't know how. I don't watch them, but they don't strike me as they could carry on conversations.
Their last breath will be pushing a button.
Yeah. So that's So anyhow, so I have Vicks, but I'm able to have fun.
That was a tough Christmas. And we knew it was coming. We knew it was going to be, because the run-up to it wasn't there. It just wasn't there. Now, maybe in your community, many of you listening maybe did have that spirit of Christmas, but I know
mine was
like going to the movies and having nothing show up on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are fewer Christmas lights in our neighborhood. You can kind of gauge that level of, and you know, when we first moved into this neighborhood, it's a nice, really nice middle-class neighborhood. And I love the fact that we would see, and it, actually when we lived in our townhouse before that, we would see Christmas carols once in a while, Christmas carolers that would come along.
Nice.
I don't think we've seen any, you know, certainly it's probably been at least 15 years. And that's, you know, those are the kind of things, the like the trappings of the season that you see, and you see how many people are interested in it and still observing it. But again, especially people, because I like the secular part of it too. I'm unlike most, but I like the bright lights and the glitz and all that stuff. I think it's, you know, it's
well,
makes
it
me
was
happy.
The highlight of our holiday year. Come on. It was
the
center point of our culture.
It was. And so, but I mean, the reason for the season is, so that's always been obviously been commercialized, but I think when you turn it into just one big commercial concept, which is what it is now for most people, I mean, you do have the religious people who remember the reason for the season and all that, but they, oddly enough, they'll kind of look down. I've known some born again Christians that, you know, think it's sinful to have a Christmas tree and stuff. And I said, it comes from a pagan holiday. It's like,
good luck.
You know. I understand that.
Christmas is a whole lot more than religion, unfortunately. It's become that. It's become a whole end of the year kind of a fest. And it doesn't have to be religious. It can be just a good human interaction, happy time. And
absolutely.
You're right. I don't have a problem with the secular side of it either. You go out and you look at the lights. That's secular, okay. But it's part of the whole magic that has been targeted and really degraded. I just shame on this culture for allowing that to happen. But when you have people 40 and under, 45 and under, where their lives are pushing buttons, what do you expect? I think you'd expect that. All right, back in just a minute with Don. Hold on, and we shall continue. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Donald Jeffries, as we get to do each week. And tonight is Tuesday. We're usually on Monday. I was just thinking about this engineered chasm between, say, under 40s, under 35, the Zillennials. Gen Z and millennials. It's engineered with this cell phone tech and all the other flat screen tech. They're literally driving an irrevocably permanent wedge between those who remember, I'm speaking in generalities now, those who remember what you and I and many of you listening know this country used to be like and what it is now. I don't see any way to repair that kind of a split and sew it back together properly. It's too different. They live in a world of digital ideologies that I don't even understand. But that's where they are.
No, and you know, this is the whole thing. And I wrote about this a lot in my book, Bullyocracy, and where, you know, teenagers, it's this kind of alienation between generations. Of course, when we were growing up, they called it the generation gap. Between the World War II generation and the hippies, and I was a little bit behind the hippies, but people were coming up then, and that, you know, were with long hair and drugs and, you know, free sex and all that stuff. That was the divide was built on that, but it actually started earlier, and I don't think there's any evidence that this generation gap existed much before, like the roaring 20s, maybe.
Not like it did now. No,
it certainly
is now is unprecedented.
No, it's just gotten worse and worse. But it's, you know, these things, they call it gradualism. They gradually get to the point, but it, like with everything else, gradualism is where they gradually, social change happens gradually. And you could see them pushing these gradual things, pushing the boundaries, you know, nonstop, so that you, in the 1950s, the concept of teenager, and I wrote about this in Bullyocracy, where there's no evidence that there was such a thing as teenage angst or the eye rolling that you get when your kids get 12 or 13 now, and it happens to all of them, where they just start rolling their eyes at you and you become the stupidest person in the world. You know nothing. And I don't think the evidence exists that was the case before the 1950s, and movies like The Wild One, where, you know, Marlon Brando's going around and has a ridiculous line where they, Johnny, what are you so upset about, man? What do you got? And, you know, then, of course, you had Rebel Without a Cause, which was a perfect microcosm of the situation. They were teenagers, were pissed off at the parents, and there was no real clear reason why. They just were. And you have Rebel Without, Catcher in the Rye came out at the same time, which contributes to that. So all that, you know, led up to, of course, rock and roll, the birth of rock and roll, and then the hippies and all that, obviously the counterculture. But now the introduction of social media, and especially the smartphones, you can see it's that gradualism is on warp speed now. I mean, it's the point now where I don't know how little kids are in today's technology, but I just found out through my sister, because she has she has great grandkids, and the little ones, they have this new thing, I don't know if you've heard of it, called Elf on a Shelf or something. It's a completely new Christmas
Never
tradition.
Heard
they
of
just
it. What is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, it's called Elf on a Shelf, and my kids, it was, well, obviously after them, where they appear, but it's something else to commercialize, and it's something else also to get parents competing with themselves over who can, you know, indulge their kids more. And it's basically you take this elf who's not very attractive looking, and you hide him in different places on however many days leading up to Christmas. You know, we had the calendar where you would move Santa. My kids would get excited to how many more days to Christmas. They would move him on the calendar. But I have the elf where the parents have to get creative and hide him.
Was that the advent calendar? Is that what that was?
Well, they had that too, but you also had, like, you could buy any kinds of, you know, calendars.
How many days to Christmas calendar? Okay, it was a takeoff on the advent calendar then.
Yeah, and the kids would move the Santa figure. But now you have this elf, which, again, I don't understand, but there's the thing. I'm already out of touch, you know. My kids are not old, but it's changing that fast. And even with the smartphone technology, again, as I mentioned, we didn't let them have that until they were older teenagers. And now all the kids have it. And the phones that they got when they were teenagers are not like, they couldn't get the internet on it or anything like that. I think text messaging was about that. It was just being introduced, but you know,
and
now
don't
with
forget
you,
the darkest side, porn is just a couple of button pushes away for any of these kids.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes it, again, it makes human relationships, because if you can just go find...
It destroys so much.
Yeah, because, you know, trying to... And they've combined that with how difficult they've made it to meet someone, especially for young men. Again, I just really feel awful for any young boys coming up, like teenagers, whatever. Now, first of all, they have to navigate the transgender nonsense. So they have to maybe not offend someone by maybe calling them a girl or something. I don't know how that works, but, or using the wrong pronouns, but just even asking a girl out on a date, that can become harassment if they say it is. So I don't
Unreal.
Know how you meet anybody.
Unreal.
So if I'm a teenager and you get to raging hormones and, you know, you can go online and, you know, look at, find any naked girl you want, doing anything you want. You know, it's going to be hard to not do that and go try to navigate this system with increasingly bitchy, frankly, young girls who are arrogant. Again, the culture has built them in that.
They're so confused. They're really messed up, a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Men too, males and females. It's war on youth. It's war on children. It's war on young people. And they are so confused now. What does their future hold for them? Really?
Yeah,
what kind of adults are they going to be? Arrested development is going to be all over the map. You watch, count on that.
Right, and that's why it's going to make it just the political elite that want, you know, obviously are controlling us with authoritarianism and all that. The one thing that it makes it a little bit difficult for more difficult for them to do that would be a cohesive family unit. People considering their family as the most important thing to them, more than their job, certainly more than the government, and being willing to defend each other and to stand up for each other. But instead, you have people going to war and not talking anymore because of Trump. Basically, I don't know how many. Again, I know so many people. I have my own family. I have cousins that just they stopped talking to each other because one of them voted for Trump, and that's just really sad. And they've destroyed the family unit. It's hard to find. I mean, I do what I can. You know, I have a much better family dynamic than most people do, and I know how lucky I am. But it's not easy because you're competing with so much propaganda that is telling the young people, especially, that is giving them completely different messages than you might want to get them. I mean, I can't imagine, Jeff, what it would be like today to have my kids going into grade school, going into middle school, and having them talk about, you know, what are your pronouns and all this stuff, or critical race theory. Again, that stuff was not a part of the curriculum not that long ago when my kids were young. And I don't know how you navigate that as a parent, because then you risk prosecution yourself, as we saw in my county, or next to my county, Loudoun County, Virginia, is where I used to work. It's next to Fairfax County where I live. But you had, I'm sure you saw, it was a viral video where they had a transgender student who just put on a dress. He didn't do anything else to say he was a girl, and started using the female restroom. And he raped a girl in there, and they raped this guy's daughter. And naturally, and nothing happened to him. And, you know, can you imagine that? And so this guy was naturally outraged. So he raised the issue at a school board meeting. When you've seen those tyrants in the school board, which apparently we haven't been able to do anything at that level. You know, if we can't change it at that level, I don't know what we do. But this guy, he was pounced on by deputies at the order of these tyrants, and, you know, beaten. And again, all those other parents standing there, this is the problem. But I say, instead of those parents jumping up and to his defense, they sat there on their hands and did nothing. And they let him take it all. And that transgender student was just transferred to another school where he raped another girl in the bathroom. I don't know what happened beyond
he
that.
He did. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. So, again, if you're a kid with raging hormones, and mm-hmm. you know, and most people in, you know, that level, most people or kids are not having sex, or and so if you know that, God, all I got to do is say I'm a girl, but I'm not really a girl. I have all my equipment, and I can go in there, and they realize early on, hey, who's got the upper hand? That, hey, this is like a special category, and I'm not going to get in trouble. So you're going to have more kids do that stuff, and it's shocking. It's shocking that the system defends.
Well, walk into the girls' locker room and talk about a voyeur's holiday. I guess that's it.
Yeah, and again, I can't imagine.
Here's the big problem, though, Don. The school administration and the school board will back this kind of insanity.
Yes, they do.
What's ahead? More madness, craziness, more psychotic. Yeah. Kids are being turned loose on each other. This is bad. Right.
I'm the leftist in me. I used to, as a civil libertarian, we used to talk about victimless crimes back in the day. They don't talk about that anymore because they want to make everything crimes. But I think there are too many people in prison. I don't want people punished and prosecuted for little things. I believe in, victimless crimes. If you're not harming anybody else.
Let me ask you this question. Hold on. Does prison really rehabilitate relatively normal people? No. Look at the recidivist rate, and you'll see it doesn't. It doesn't do it. It's torture. It doesn't do anything. Yeah. Now, some will say, well, he or she deserved it. But if it's a white-collar crime or a truly victimless crime, what's the gain? There must be another way. Community service would be much more appropriate, wouldn't it?
Sure.
Than to pay $60,000 a year to put somebody in a steel cage?
Right. Well, yeah, and I wrote an article once called "Just Do." I think it was called "Just Do It" or "Just Do Something." Or I can't remember what the title was, but it was based on people's rallying cry all the time: "Is, you know, do this, do something to our leaders." And the problem is, whenever they do something, it's always the wrong thing. They never do anything good. So every time, as the libertarians used to point out, every time a new law is passed, you create new criminals. depending on how severe. So, like, for instance, marijuana was all, even heroin, cocaine, they were all legal up until the 1930s, perfectly legal. And suddenly, when they
there were never really any a huge societal problem from it. There wasn't.
The original Coca-Cola had cocaine in it, had real cocaine in the recipe. Right. So that's why everybody loved it so much, I guess. But eventually, obviously, you had tons of criminals, and now you have so many people in jail. Think about that, for doing something that would not have been a criminal less than 100 years ago.
Prisons are big business. Yeah. You're right. Everything you said is correct.
But on the other hand, it's priorities where you see the same time you have these, you know, these local officials that are letting, legalizing shoplifting basically in California. And I said, I can't imagine being a young guy and knowing that I can steal up to $900 worth of merchandise, I think it is, without being
Where's that a law? Which state is that?
Yeah, California. And I think it might be New York. I think it's not the whole state, but I know it's in L.A., San Francisco, I think. And I think it's in New York City, maybe Chicago, a lot of these big cities. And
so makes it totally legalizes shoplifting. Right there.
Why would you pay for anything? Especially if you're a dumb teenager and you want, to buy CD music or something.
Did they even get a citation, Don, of any kind?
They might get a meaningless citation, but I mean, it's going to rip that up, I guess. But at the same time that's happening, and at the same time you have DAs, including one of the DAs, the black guy in New York that prosecuted Trump for the first time. This guy was famous for cutting out bail for violent people who've been accused of violent crimes and letting all kinds of violent offenders out. Turning loose violent offenders in a lot of terms, in terms of under the guise of racism, so it's because the offenders are, somebody that are let out are non-white. But at the same time, they're targeting people for political persecution. They're targeting thought criminals. So you have Alex Jones out there. You have Owen Schroyer, who, served 47 days in prison. And he's on tape telling people not to go in the Capitol. So we have that kind of thing. You're the leader of the Proud Boys, who, oddly enough, for a white supremacist organization, is a Hispanic. It's kind of a strange thing for a racist organization to do, to name someone that they presumably hate to lead them. But this guy wasn't even in Washington, D.C., and he got 22 years, which is more than a lot of murderers get. That's the kind of stuff that's going on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, my. Now. Well, yeah, down and down it goes.
So you have that. And then so you have this kind of dichotomy between these woke George Soros-funded prosecutors who are wanting to end bail. And again, I'm for prison reform. It is wrong. There's a lot of poor people, especially, that sit in prison for a long time awaiting trial because they can't afford bail and they can't afford a lawyer. So they get a court appointed defense attorney who spends less than 5 minutes on average with them. I wrote about this in Survival of the Richest. Most people don't realize about it. But on the other hand, you can't just allow violent crime to go unpunished, especially when you're targeting people for political persecution for nonviolent crimes, which is what they're doing. That's why what's happening with Donald Trump is so important symbolically. Because they're setting precedents that if you or me or anybody else that they don't like, if we exaggerate our assets, which again, how many people haven't exaggerated their assets? They can say, Jeff Rentz says he's got this, and he clearly doesn't. That's a crime. Remember the case, the United States, the city of New York whoever it is that's prosecuting for that versus Donald Trump, former president of the United States, he was convicted on that. And it sets the precedent. Same thing with the vote fraud case in Georgia, where if somebody complains about the vote and they say, the insurrectionist case between Donald Trump, they were cited in the case, the state of Georgia versus Donald Trump, he was convicted on insurrection. So this is insurrection, what you're suggesting, that there was vote fraud here. And if you don't like it, you have Dominion. You have Dominion, who has problems going back to when they were Diebold, before they were bought out by Dominion. And I talked about that in my book, Hidden History, where there's the Collier brothers, who you had on your show back in the day, wrote Vote Scam. And I wrote about it, too. this vote fraud goes back a long time with electronic voting machines. And they were talking about it then. And now you have not only Trump, but you have Rudy Giuliani, who, again, it's not a sympathetic figure to me. He was one of the guys who covered up 9/11. But he was some jury just awarded $148 million, ordered him to pay $148 million, which I'm sure he doesn't have, to two black women who worked at a poll who they claimed were defamed. It's like, what? I mean, this we are living in this is Alice in Wonderland. We're to the point where, if you remember, Lewis Carroll came up with that great phrase where the Red Queen at trial is making all these ridiculous statements. And is your honor, what do you think? He says, here's the sentence. And he says, wait a minute, what do you mean sentence? We haven't got the verdict yet. He says, sentence first, verdict afterwards. And that was considered nonsense and, you know, fun reading. And you're thinking, that can't really happen. That's essentially what happened. Donald Trump and the black female prosecutor was prosecuting in New York for one of his ridiculous, you know, non-crimes. She bragged recently about how the judge, you know, our judge we had appointed here, he said that Donald Trump was guilty before the trial even began. The prosecutor is telling you the judge said before the trial began.
It's appalling. think of if you were a public defender, imagine what the load on you would be in a court system now. Waiting for a court-appointed attorney, a PD.
Imagine that. And you have somebody, I mean, Alex Jones can be criticized like Trump. And again, I don't know how much a part of this he is or anything, but on the surface of it, he claims that they wouldn't, that the judge in his first case, when he naturally, I mean, his defense should have been the First Amendment. When he tried to use the First Amendment in the States, he was told by the judge that he could not mention the First Amendment in the courtroom. Now, this is what kind of a country do we have when that is the foundation of the Constitution, the foundation of our society is the Bill of Rights. And you can't mention the most important part of the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment. That's why it's first. And he was told that. So, and people, because of the identity politics, the politicization of everything, because people hate Alex Jones's personality, millions do, and millions more hate Donald Trump's personality because of who it is. They don't care what happens. I don't think anything will probably really happen to either one of them, but taking it at face value, these are ridiculous prosecutions, and they're symbolically setting the template for having these kinds of prosecutions to other people. And you're already seeing with Rudy Giuliani. Again, I don't think anything will happen to him really necessarily, but they're prosecuting all these people for ridiculous crimes and coming up with outrageous sentences. Alex Jones he's going to pay almost $1 billion, really, to selected parents at Sandy Hook because he questioned an event that was a nationally reported event. And this is, again, what's to stop? And I've said many times to people that cheer that on, said, okay, a lot of us write about 9/11 a lot. What's to stop and 9/11 parents from suing us and saying we're harassing them? You're causing us emotional duress by questioning this. They set the precedent. And it's very disturbing. And almost no one sees it the way I do. But again, I'm a civil libertarian, and there's not very many of us left, and that's part of the problem, because those January 6th prisoners I had on my show last Friday, and listeners out here, you'll be able to catch the reruns, because Jeff runs my reruns of rebroadcast of iProtest. We had Ashley Babbitt's mom, Mickey Whitcroft, back for a second visit with another J6 defendant last Friday, and it'd be interesting to hear. You can see what she had to say. But these people are, the other guy stepped inside the Capitol building, past some police officers who let him go. He was inside the Capitol building for 36 seconds, and he could have gotten for years. I think he ended up with serving 60 days or something. But that's just, you know, these are really dangerous precedents when you can do that. And at the same time, you have violent criminals that are out without any bail, and yet you have those political prisoners in Washington, D.C. And Mickey and Ashley Babbitt's mom, she goes down there, and if we had a real media, it would be a heartfelt thing to show. Every night she goes there with a bunch of other people, and they sing the national anthem, and they say prayers for the other prisoners there. It's a touching scene, and if we had a media, they might want to cover that and show, but they don't want to do it because they want to stay away from the fact that these people have been in prison now for almost 3 years, denied all due process. There isn't a civil libertarian anywhere that is going there. The ACLU isn't concerned whatsoever with them. It's just shocking. We are in just really dark times. But yeah, that brings it back full circle. Why it's nice to get lost up in the Christmas season, because as I wrote in my article that I just wrote about a Christmas, All I Want for Christmas, and I talked about, the best thing about Christmas is that just about everyone is basically going to be in the best mood they'll ever be in at Christmas. They'll be as nice as they're going to be, and they'll be as generous as they're going to be. So
it's a shining light in every calendar year, the Christmas holiday season. And they're taking it away from us. They've separated our young people, our children, in so many cases, with this digital technology and peer pressure therein. And believe me, there's a lot of it. Kids have committed suicide because of Facebook ugly remarks. And your book, again, on brutal behavior of your peers, yep. The bullyocracy is extremely important to understand. But these kids live in almost a digital prison of acceptance or destruction. There's no middle ground on a lot of it. They're really into it heavily, and they can't stop. It's a terrible addiction. Terrible.
Absolutely.
And I've seen adults, 30s, 40s, with right on that phone, like all of you listening have. You see it all the time.
Yes.
This is such a revolutionary event in human evolution or devolution, that it hasn't been understood yet by the majority of those who are addicted to it. They may never figure it out. Anyhow, final comment?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it could be a wonderful thing. Just like the internet or anything, even television, anything like that. These are wonderful advances in technology. And it's just a shame that these evil, twisted people get their hands on it and pervert it to their own ends, which are not for the betterment of the people.
No. And this year is going to be particularly difficult for many who have taken the injections through peer pressure, mandates, forced to keep your job, whatever. This thing, 2-3 years after you've gotten it, the chickens are coming, and they're ugly chickens. They're coming home. So that's going to be another tough one. It already is. Don, thank you. It's always great talking with you. I think idea might be worth some consideration.
I like that. That's a good idea. Thank you.
It's kind of your emblem in a way, anyway, if you think about it. All right. Take care of yourself. Talk next week.
Okay, Jeff. Take care.
Good night. Mr. Donald Jeffries, always fun talking with Don. There's no interviews here. It's just talk. We just have conversations, and you are part of it, and we'll be right back.